is no place to escape to.
This is the last podcast
on the left.
That's when the cannibalism started.
I do like the gilfs. It's nice, but the shoes look good. That's all it sends me. It's a mixture of all that, and now it's a lot of thank you to Fernando. My entire algorithm is people cooking.
Dude,
isopods.
I had dreams about isopods last night. Mm. Legitimately, isopod dreams. It was so fucking weird, but I wasn't scared of them. I hated them. I hate them when I saw them. But in the dream, I was like, I was kind of fine with them.
All right.
I hate it. Yeah. I hate
I'm
like isopods.
Working. They're the I'm worst. Working through it.
Yeah, you got to. Well, it's the juice. You ever seen an isopod cooked?
They do eat them.
There's this horrible brown juice that comes out of them when you cut them open.
No, Lord.
Are we recording? We're recording. Patton.
All right. There
Patton,
we go.
You've never seen isopod liquor?
No. I'm still getting over the news. You just told me before we started recording that the chief suspect in the Tylenol poisonings just passed away, yes?
Oh, yeah. The
what was
ripe
his name?
Young age of 76 years old. And, man, he died a free man. The luckiest bomber of all time.
James Lewis.
All of our Gen X heroes are this is when they start dying.
That's what it is.
We're going to start losing them. So there's two. So now he's gone. So how many Rolling Stones are left? Two. Beatles are left. Two guys from The Who. Two Zeppelins.
Yep, and of course
Dylan's still hanging in there, but we lost Lewis.
Hard names when you're in a band. As you get older with dementia, The Who, they literally will just be asking that. And then Rolling Stones will be about wheelchairs fairly soon.
Guess so, yes.
Yeah, he's on fire. Welcome to the show, everyone. Last podcast on the left. Ben hanging out with Henry and Marcus, plus a special guest today. He's a world renowned. You know him. I don't even got to give his freaking credits. It's Patton Oswald. Thank you so much for being here, Patton.
IMDb mate.
Yeah.
He's got a new book coming out June 20th. It's going to be with Dark Horse. It is called Minor Threats.
Well, it's coming out July 12th.
It's out now.
It's actually out today.
I purchased.
I got a wrong email. Someone's getting fired.
It's
That's what the email says.
It's okay. That was the one. There were a couple of comics shops that did get it on June 20th. So that's right.
Boom.
But it goes wide. Today, as we're recording this on July 12th.
And you're with one of the widest podcasts that's ever existed.
Physically wide. By the way, oh God, this is embarrassing. I performed at the Black Cat in D.C. This is years ago with the Comedians of Comedy, me and Zach.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
The Black Cat, along with the 9:30 Club, one of my hometown music clubs growing up. Not that I ever really got to go there because I didn't have a car. But we did our show and the place was packed to the walls, and I'm backstage sort of doing the passive aggressive humble brag thing with the manager. Like, wow, we really, really packed the place out. Right.
Well, yeah,
and I'm wanting him to say like, yeah, you sold out. Like, so I can go, I sold out the Black Cat in D.C.
Yeah.
And he goes, yeah, you did really well. And I go, well, I mean, it was, you couldn't move in there.
Yeah. It was almost like,
it was definitely packed. It was packed. I go, well, I mean, like, but it was definitely sold out. And he goes, well, I mean, you know, when it's packed, it holds about, 1,000 people and you sold 850 tickets. And I was like, I'm sorry. No, I mean, we sold way more and you could not move in the place.
Right.
And he goes, well, we do a lot of like punk shows and, those fans, your fans are like, and he did that motion like they're just sort of physically and so we can only fit 850.
You know what? That fucking counts. And I'm so sick of us being like ticket sales based upon individuals that purchase, and he's based upon weight.
Weight of audience.
I want it by BMI index. That's all I want. No, hang on. BMI index is a.
It's a fallacy.
It's not a fallacy. It's redundancy because BMI is body mass index. I want it by BMI measurement.
Well, it's a good thing you corrected that.
Yes.
All right. Well, today we got ourselves after 6 weeks of the Manhattan Project. We are just going to do a nice palate cleanser, which is probably also going to be disgusting.
Yeah. My brain is flappy. We've been talking about all the horrible things we've learned about America for the last like month and a half.
Oh,
and it just keeps going. And why stop?
Yeah,
why stop now?
Today we're doing our relax fit true crime roundup. So this is the time you let out your belt. Yes. I see you got, we all have softer pants on.
Oh, it's a soft pant day.
Soft pants.
Also, if you have Jeep, if you have a Jeep, be careful. People are putting rubber ducks on them. I read that article in the Wall Street Journal. Why America getting so dumb? Literally, it was an article in the Wall Street Journal about if you have a Jeep, people are putting ducks on it.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know either. I read the article.
He's so scared. Yellow Wall Street Journal.
We've got limited column space, guys. Well, my Jeep duck story's got to run.
It's got to run.
My Jeep's, you know, we got you tell those people in the submersible that imploded, they can wait till Wednesday because my Jeep duck story's going
Whatever
in.
Whatever Brandon William Hurst gets is what he gets.
Well, we're leaving America for this first story, and we're going to be going to London. A man accused of carrying out castrations on other men and broadcasting the footage on his eunuch maker website has appeared in court.
Oh man, and everyone applauded.
Well, no, obviously the first question is, did these people volunteer to have their genitals cut off?
Absolutely volunteers, every single one of them.
Well, then let the man cook.
See, how is this a crime?
Why is he in court?
Marius Gustafsson, 45, along with eight others, is alleged to have performed extreme body modifications, including the removal of penises and testicles.
Good. Mm.
The procedures were filmed and uploaded to the website he ran, and subscribers would pay to watch.
So far, great. Monetized.
Uh-huh.
Don't see the issue.
Yeah. I don't see the issue. It's great for the ball jar company.
Yes.
Literally fill it with balls.
It was weird that one of their sponsors was Blue Chew. That was a little weird.
Well, it's just ridiculous what they're doing nowadays.
That's just not good branding right there. You got to find your audience.
I also think it's cheating.
It is.
You should have to do it soft.
What am I going to do with all these dick and balls? What a day for this guy.
Well, Gustafsson, who is originally from Norway, is said
there's a shock. He's from a weird Scandinavian country, and he's cutting off people's balls and dicks? God. Wait, no. Say it ain't so.
Hey, Patton, you're a really funny comedian. What if he was from Russia and the dick and balls cut you off?
Russia. Yeah,
that's pretty good, huh?
Very good. Thank you, Kissel.
Gustafsson is said to have been the ringleader in a wide-ranging conspiracy involving up to 29 offenses of extreme body modification, the removal of body parts, the trade in body parts, and the uploading of videos.
No, it seems to be the UK is an entirely different vibe about all of this stuff. Because we were talking about before the show.
Yeah.
So they're all being charged for, was it GBH?
GBH,
right?
Grievous bodily harm.
Grievous bodily harm, which I believe in America, you are allowed to not charge somebody for grievous bodily harm. Like if you go.
Well, they volunteer for it.
If you volunteer for it.
Yeah.
But it seems like in this court or in this system, side stories, lpotl@gmail.com, if you could explain it to me at all, like they go in there and they're basically saying, well, if you're cutting somebody dicks and balls off, that's not right.
That's not right.
Not proper.
First of all, it's not done.
Who are they to tell you? What magistrate has the right to tell you if you can castrate yourself or not? Are they happy afterwards?
Oh, absolutely.
I truly don't see the problem. The only issue I could see is the interstate travel, selling or the shipping of genitals and cocks.
What are the genitals? Where are they being sent to?
Right.
Certain people buy them. Certain people auction.
For what?
Well, I actually like
collection. Why? I mean, what do you collect?
I like to I do funny taxidermy with fish.
There you go.
I give them big bones.
Let me tell you something. The kids that go to puppet shows are very jaded. They need something new. You know, they're not easy to thrill the way they used to.
It's puppetry with the penis.
Have you seen that cock on Kermit? I was like, why are they adding it? What are they doing to our kids?
Patton, you've been around like the true crime world in and out. Have you dealt with people who sell serial killer memorabilia or just macabre memorabilia across the board?
Yes, I have very much. I know people who do. I've also, there used to be a place on Vermont back in the day. Called Mondo Video Agogo, and they had plenty of serial killer tchotchkes on the wall, paintings. There is a place called the Museum of, I believe it's called the Museum of Horrors or something. It's down in, I was filming in, Savannah, Georgia, and there's a amazing.
That's like the most haunted city in America.
Well, that is, I will say, that's a crazy haunted city. There are so many ghost crime craziness tours that a couple of which I took and was genuinely blown away at the level of depravity. Yeah. Not just historical depravity, kind of recent stuff that, that had gone on.
Why? What happened in Savannah, Georgia?
there's a case, and I'm maybe you guys have covered it, but there was a, and I'm only giving you the bare bones because a lot of this I blocked out, but there was a kid, it was a young guy who was like a drug dealer and was trying to buy drugs off of this guy, and the guy didn't have the drugs or didn't have the money that he wants, so he killed him and burned him to death.
Oh.
And it was completely dead to rights, but his parents were crazy rich and powerful in the area.
Oh,
this is in the 70s. Mm-hmm. And completely got him off. And he walked around just free, everyone knowing you dismembered and burned a guy to death. And then he opened up restaurants, and each of their names, one was called like the Inferno. It was almost
you leaned in.
And one of them was still open, and they showed it to me. It was like, and that's the guy that, like, the guy's still alive.
You see him out there with a grill and place, stuff, like big cuck's hat.
Yeah, it's this weird, like, I can do whatever I want. And there was also this unspoken thing. This is in the late 70s, early 80s of like, he only killed a drug dealer. Like, it's like,
yeah, it doesn't matter.
He tortured and burned, like, beyond it, the guy is clearly insane.
Yes.
And now he's running restaurants.
To be fair, most chefs are insane.
Yeah, that's high-end places.
That's season three of The Bear, by the way.
Well, I was Jake, the Bar Rescue is really getting dark these days.
It really is getting dark.
Wait, if you go
I just stabbed him in the chest. Yes, chef.
Yes, chef.
Okay, I'm burning him up. Yes, chef.
I would rather be burned to death, though, than burned sort of to be left alive just a little bit.
Complete it. Yeah.
Wait, those memorabilia stories, a lot of times, I feel I've seen a lot of the idea of chasing down human remains and trying to figure out where they are properly sourced. It's extremely difficult. Yeah. We cover it on Side Stories all the time. People just sell illegal human body parts 24/7. So dicks and balls in a jar actually sounds like merch.
Yeah,
it is. And there's also like a big trade. Again, there are a lot of genuinely horrible Holocaust deniers out there, but there are some people, it's not that they're denying the Holocaust, they are trying to expose the charlatans that are selling fake Holocaust memorabilia
like fake lampshades made of human skin and stuff
there's a huge market, which is so fucking creepy.
It is.
And also just, you know, it muddles the record, because then if you have enough fake stuff out there, then the actual Holocaust denying assholes can go, see, it's all fake.
Yeah.
So you gotta nip that shit in the bud.
Rob, can you actually cancel what we got for Pat? Because we were gonna thank him for being on the show.
Much time is left on that eBay auction?
We're gonna withdraw. The world's smallest violin, or in my case, a normal size violin, for the person who is upset that his lampshade made of human skin was fake. I was doing an Israeli Jewish skin. Sorry, buddy.
Yeah. It's the line from Raiders in Arizona, man, they ought to sell tickets. I'd buy one. You know, just there's people that there. And look, I'm not even judging him, because I'm absolutely drawn to all that shit. Drawn to all that shit. That is in me too. But there has to be a moment where you look at yourself and go, what am I? Well, ooh, is there footage of that?
I got cut off. I both self and then my wife asked me gently, just being like, let's not have any more serial killer memorabilia in the home unless the pieces I have were given to me.
Yeah.
So
at least I've
never, I will say, I've never spent money. Yeah. But it is like, but it does, it's a whole market, and it's just crazy just how, because Marcus loves human bones.
And I actually am in possession of quite a few human.
He does.
Like, I have a human collarbone, I have some skull fragments.
Where were these sourced?
The collarbone, you know, it's funny, I don't remember.
Great.
Oh, good.
Someone just handed me a collarbone at a live show, and I'm like, this is a human collarbone. And then you meet so many people.
You meet so many people.
So many stories.
I can't be chasing all these waterfalls.
Yeah.
I do know, though, that all the human skull fragments that I have, those are plague victims that have been dug up over the years in various English archaeological expeditions.
Go back to your Ed Alive show. Because a lot of performers are having stuff thrown at them these days. I just hope that you don't have a pelvic bone tossed at you while you're saying your goodnights.
To be fair, I think the audience is very respectful of the bones.
They are.
We've received vials of blood. We've received somebody's father's ashes, which I thought was a little creepy.
I still have the ashes of Philip Mellon. It's in a tiny in an airplane bottle of vodka, and it has the name Philip Mellon written on its side.
Didn't someone just throw their mother's ashes at Pink at a concert?
Oh my goodness.
They threw their mother's ashes at Pink, and Their ashes got on her.
And so do you think that...
Really? There's footage of it.
You actually believe an artist is responsible enough to properly dispose of your mother's ashes. You are incorrect.
She's going to go take a shower in the day room, and that's it. And then your mom's gonna haunt the Gree room at the Citibank Center. That's it. That's gonna happen.
Perhaps that's what she always wanted to do.
Maybe, yeah.
Perhaps. Let's get back to the cock and balls in London.
Yeah, see how you feel about that when you're watching the polyphonic spree get changed in between shows.
You just see some woman
bunch of
like,
sweaty hippies. Whoa. Like, oh man.
How do they go on tour with this many people?
The GBH charges include the removal of a man's penis, the clamping of another's testicle, and the freezing of a leg, which required amputation. And the freezing of a leg, I've seen that a lot in various amputation fetish communities, where what they do is they actually use dry ice to freeze the leg completely.
Liquid nitrogen?
Liquid
dip
nitrogen,
it in there.
Yeah. Oh, and then they just like yikes. tap it off, and then it's gone.
Yeah, fucking hurt.
Oh, there's a I believe it's a either Japanese or Korean movie called The Men Behind the Sun, which is about horrific. Ugh. Yeah.
Yeah,
Experiments that were done, and what part of them was the freezing the arms and then just snapping them off.
That is one of the nastiest movies I have ever seen.
Yeah.
Also,
the pressure chamber.
The pressure chamber. I think about it all the time.
Me too.
My goodness. But I would just put the leg outside the window of the Snowpiercer. That'd be good.
But the people, again, they sign up for this stuff.
They do sign up for this stuff, yeah. And that's kind of the legal gray area that they're in there. But on the other hand, it's legal everywhere, or a legal gray area everywhere else, but it seems like in England it's very cut and dry. There's so many guys
that are
going.
No pun intended.
Yes, indeed.
Sorry. I'm sitting right there. Am I not going to
cut and dry ice?
But I don't know why. But I feel like they just have a lot more. How do you put it? It's in the UK, they're a little bit more their ickiness towards certain societal aspects. Like they put into their legal system.
Well, yeah,
I think it also, and I'm just speculating here, this might also have to do with the fact that they have socialized healthcare. So if people are injuring themselves, if people are cutting, they become kind of, you know, wards of the state.
They're gunking up the system.
They're gunking up the system. But here in America, you do that to yourself, you just get tossed off to the side of the road, and we don't got to worry about you no more.
Also, I think England has a much, much longer history, and I'm sure that it is psychically scarred a lot of them, even on a DNA epigenetic level of mutilation and torture and real horrors just within the city itself. I was very lucky to have a very deep kind of exclusive tour of the Tower of London. And if you ever go to England, it sounds very touristy. Go visit the Tower of London.
Yeah.
It is fucking fascinating. That place was basically Abu Ghraib during Victorian times in the middle of the city. And oh my fucking God, the shit they would do there to people. When you went in there, you didn't come out.
Oh yeah.
And you were.
Would that be where they would put you in the pit and then basically you were in the bottom of a toilet for the rest of your life?
Yes. Yes.
I don't like it.
And why are you in the Tower of London? Queen was in a bad mood.
God, cool.
And they just sent people there. Like, and it had nothing to do with, like, Sir Walter Raleigh was in the fucking Tower of London because he bored her one day. All right, take him to the tower.
Oh, God, you better start licking her fucking toes or something.
Exactly.
As soon as she looks remotely close to you, better penis and fart, whatever you have to do.
And there's all the spots where they're like, they beheaded people. Here's where, you know, King Henry killed all, you know, it's just fucking nuts.
Well, Marcus and Henry had a chance to tour the church in Edinburgh where the mornings they would behead and then they would just go on with the service.
Basically, they had an outdoor concentration camp where they were in the 1600s. They just chained up a bunch of people in a field and let them die there.
Yeah.
And then it became extremely, extremely haunted. And then what they did, they ran out of room for the bodies. So what they would do is dig them out. They would dig everything out. They would smash up bones and stuff, all these people, the first layer of bodies, they just die there, and then they drop them like 20 feet under and then put the old bodies back on top, to the point where something like 250,000 bodies were inside of the cemetery. And then they wanted to redo the city, but they needed to move the cemetery, so they dug it all up and then used the remnants of the bones that were in that cemetery to build half of New Edinburgh.
Yep. Yeah.
And of course,
so if you look in Edinburgh and you see all the walls, like all the stones there, and you see white flecks, so in the stones, it's literally human bones, which is why that place is what it is.
It's very haunted because they moved the tombstones, but they didn't move the bodies.
Yeah, you're right.
No, they made the bodies into an escalator.
Literally, it's a city built on bones. Yeah. It's freaking horrifying.
It's awesome. Fuck.
Live from your grave.
Well, here's the little twist when it comes to the eunuch maker. When the eunuch maker himself appeared in court, he was in a wheelchair.
The eunuch maker.
Hello. Ah, yes.
Nothing better goes friends. All right. He was in a wheelchair.
Basically, he was in a wheelchair.
I do love that all Mentos ads were just like, were you drunk last night and hungover? Do you have a job interview you forgot about?
Try Mentos.
Mentos. He's wheeled in a wheelchair.
He's wheeled in a wheelchair because he himself is a eunuch. He had his own leg, penis, and nipple removed.
By himself?
By other people.
So it's a whole community.
It's a whole community. Yeah, there's like nine guys in court.
Would you trust a huge dick eunuch maker?
No.
I need to see the process.
You don't trust a skinny chef. You don't trust a short basketball coach. And you do not trust a eunuch maker with a huge gun.
That's right.
Yep. Well,
oh my God, I never thought of it that way.
He has to be into it.
I gotta say, I mean, at least with all this social media and all this ice, at least they're socializing. Like they're meeting people, they're talking to other people. Come on. And they're like, it's hands-on arts and crafts.
It is.
And he's also a client. I actually think the fact that
he's also a client.
I think that totally changes it. I really do because he's participating, he's into it. He's walking it like he's talking it.
He's not.
We talk about Q like that, about how Q was about the friends they made along the way. January 6th was really just about like them finally all getting to see these buddies they've been talking to online for so long, and finally they're all in one spot on vacation. You know how hard it is to get my friends on vacation together?
I've said this before. People that say MAGA people and Q people are lost. I'm like, no. They're, for the first time in their lives, they've been found. It's the only time in their life they've ever felt spotted or found or in. They're not lost.
No,
that's the problem. They are actually there on mission for the first time in their lives.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And that's why it's hard to get heard for the first time.
Someone's making space for them in this little community.
And so it doesn't matter when people go, I just showed it. Video of Trump saying one thing, but then he said a different thing. I said, they don't care.
They don't.
It has nothing to do with Trump. It has nothing. It's just like, I have friends.
I've never had friends. They're being made to feel special for the first time in their lives.
Yeah. And they know it's the only time in their lives they're going to feel like this. If this all collapses, I mean, a lot of the, I'm sure a lot of the Nazi torturers and a lot of the torturers in South America, when those regimes fell, they didn't miss the, I'm sure they missed the torture because they were fucking psychos, but they miss, oh my God, where's my prestige? Where's my people listening to me for the first time?
They all become the candelabra from Beauty and the Beast, they're gathering dust. They're wondering where their purpose is.
Yeah. Well, back to this story here. These guys truly did have a community. They even appeared in court together. The eunuch maker appeared alongside Peter Waits, 65 years old, who was charged with conspiracy to cause GBH with intent. Waits is alleged to have been involved with 9 of the 29 incidents, while the Romanian national, Ion Siacure, 28, who works in a hotel in Scotland, is said to have been involved in 2. Siacure, who appeared separately, faces the same count of conspiracy to cause GBH, and all 3 men were remanded in custody ahead of their next appearance.
Well, that's all you got to do to mend the age gap. Just get a huge gap of a gaping wound between your legs. Yeah. 64 and 28. When was the last time you saw a 64-year-old and a 28-year-old hanging out?
I saw some stuff on the internet.
That's your lemon party. That's your whole thing. You're a guilt guy.
You can always count on me.
For sure.
That's what friends are for.
My balls.
Oh, God.
Now, wasn't the thing called, isn't their crew called the Nullos?
The Nullos. Well, these guys are said to be a part of a larger movement called the Nullos.
There's more of them.
But it's a cute name. It sounds like a marshmallow cookie.
It does.
Yeah, it's a cute name. They're called.
You got an A+ on your math? Have some Nullos.
I love you.
You work so hard. I'm really proud of you.
Well, a Nullo, it's short for, you know, nullification.
Yeah.
They also call themselves smoothies.
Cute.
Wait a minute. I wonder if that's from the show that I was on, Happy, because there's a hitman who is a self eunuch and his name is Smoothie.
Oh, that's actually very cool.
It's an amazing.
Happy is great, by the way.
Thank you. Well, the main hitman on that show, played by an incredible actor. He should have gotten an Emmy for that.
And
role.
I just think it's ridiculous when they say Patton Oswalt hasn't had a social impact. You're like, look at this. What are you talking about? I've inspired multiple cock and balls to be released from the body that doesn't want them.
But it's not just cock and balls. Oh. Smoothies can also be women. There are also women called smoothies. They have their vagina voluntarily stitched closed.
Whoa.
And they have their nipples, breasts, and clitoris removed completely.
Wow. Wait a minute, how did, oh, okay.
So, they, man, they don't, that's, they must be such fast swimmers.
I know the question you're going to ask. They leave a tiny urethra. Their urethra is right next to the anus so that, you know, they sit down to pee and that's where everything works out.
I'm going to tell you, I'm not speaking for all women, but if I was a woman, I definitely would want that pee-pee coming on my belly button because that's fun. It's a new thing. It's something else. That's boring.
Well, it'd be difficult. You'd have to surfboard it. You'd have to, you'd have to boogie kind of belly, belly board it.
Yeah,
you'd
have to plank every time.
I mean, I guess that frees up a lot of time for the rest of your life if you're working on others. I mean, their Duolingo scores must be crazy.
Yeah, man.
Like they've got all kinds of time. Yeah.
One of the famous nullos is Mao Sugiyama, a Japanese artist and asexual activist who in 2012 had his genitals surgically removed, cooked, and served to paying guests at a public banquet. Sugiyama, who uses the nickname Ham Cybell, also had his nipples removed.
Ham Cybell sounds like an open mic comedian that only talks about sandwiches.
He's not opening for you this tour.
Ham Cybell? Falling out.
We had a little bit of a falling out.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Yeah, because he caught me standing up peeing, and he took it as a attack. And I was like, I'm totally cool with your life. He's like, he's a little militant.
It's unfortunate.
But hang on, he served his genitals at a banquet.
Yeah, that's a lot.
How are those genitals? We got genitals all day, chef.
Genitals all day.
And fire those genitals now. Fire everything.
Yes, chef.
You mentioned he's an activist. We love activism in many ways.
Yeah.
That's how social change occurs. But what's the message?
The message is that asexuals should be free to be asexuals and should not be shamed for being asexual.
I agree with that.
Hang on, but are people shaming asexual people?
Apparently.
Well, I don't know.
I feel like it is one of those being like, okay, buddy. Did it happen this afternoon or is this just a general sense because you're eating the dick and balls because you want to have a fun party?
In their defense, I would say it seems like whatever sexual thing you have, whether it affects people or not, there's also, and I wonder when they're going to start demanding their rights, there seems to be a section of the population that they're turn on or the thing that fuels them is being outraged at what any other person's choice is. Like, and now that, like, I guess, you know, gay and lesbian are kind of just accepted and no one gives a shit. Now they're going hard on trans people in another generation. No one will give a fuck about trans people. So they're still going after whatever but I'm waiting for the people that go, but my turn on is to be angry at people and you are squashing on my rights. My thing is to like how far will this go?
Oh yeah, dude. I feel
by the way, gay and lesbian people never affected anybody.
No.
But
no.
Of course people were outraged. So of course
you affect people even less. You're asexual.
Asexual literally doesn't affect anyone. But of course there will be someone going, wait a minute, what are you saying is? He doesn't care about sex. I'm pissed off.
Like
they say it barely suppressing a smile. They're so excited they have something new to be angry about.
Well, that's why I feel like the same movement, it's going to be the next foodie movement is going to be bad food. It's going to be food that specifically tastes bad and looks like shit. And
then you have to go
and be like, whoa, this is incredible how bad this is. We're going to be in hyper irony where it's like nothing is real anymore.
Have you been to that new restaurant, Gray?
Yum.
Yeah, they're doing an all room temperature tasting menu.
Yeah,
it is revolting.
It's fucking fantastic.
I'm on a waiting list. I couldn't get in. I got to wait for someone to cancel. And when they text you, you got to get down there immediately.
They've got this ham that came from a certain part of the shoulder that they couldn't get for years until technology came around. It's called
people. Yeah. People wouldn't eat it.
Yeah. They're doing dashboard sushi this weekend.
Yeah. Oh god,
it's gonna be so good.
It's 105 degrees on Saturday.
It's really amazing. Yeah.
Environmentally warm.
Yeah. California rolls tempura.
Oh.
How many people got fed from this person's cock and balls.
Yeah.
It doesn't say exactly.
How many did he feed?
It doesn't say.
That'd be a bragging right.
Seriously.
Oh, I fed a whole soccer team.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, really? I was just an amuse-bouche.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was a crudo.
I think I could do a table of four for a nice brunch. I think my genitalia could serve, you know, there would have to be some sides.
Five.
Five people?
Yeah, he cooked, seasoned, and served bite-sized morsels of his testicles, scrotal sac, and penis to five gourmands who dished out $250 apiece for the rarities, and he says that his lost penis, at its most erect, was 6.3 inches.
Fantastic.
Now, but this is fantastic. When it comes down to it, though, obviously with cooking, you're going to have some shrinkage. I do wonder what that looks like at the end of the day.
Oh, yeah.
It's got to be.
Do you boil it? Watching, does it get bigger? Do you? Oh.
They have video footage of it, and yeah. I did watch it, and it is kind of thing.
Of the feast?
Of the feast. Oh. And it really, to be honest, it is just two bites per.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's kind of annoying because what if you really liked it?
I think you have to go. You have to prepare to go God. Eat after.
What if you really liked it? Like, I got to find a place to get. Fuck.
How the fuck am I going to do this?
Loved that. That was so good. And that becomes your weird craving. And you're up late on DoorDash, like just putting the word penis, nothing's coming up.
Just going on.
God
go
damn
right
it.
To Grindr.
Going on Craigslist, be like, how attached to your dick are you?
Yeah.
Do you want to separate?
I mean, I guess theoretically, you could cook anything and make it palatable if you're a good enough cook.
I suppose so.
You ever see that? There's a short film by Les Blank called Werner Herzog Eats a Shoe. You've seen that, right?
No.
That sounds amazing.
When Les Blank made his first movie, Gates of Heaven, a documentary about pet cemeteries.
I love Gates of Heaven. It's incredible.
It's amazing. But Werner Herzog told him when he started, he goes, if you finish this, I will eat my shoe. Like, you'll never finish this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then he finished it. And when they premiered in Berkeley, Werner Herzog flew over and Alice Waters from Chez Panisse, and there's a whole documentary, 20 minutes. You can watch it for free on Canopy. She cooks his boot and he eats it at the premiere.
No That's shit. Awesome.
And incredible. He's like choking. It's like a leather boot. But she like, she marinates it in duck fat for 3 days, stuffs it with tomatoes and shit. Like it looks freaking delicious. But he's still at the premiere, like eating it going, I don't like cowards. And he's just chewing on this leg.
He's so good.
He's such an icon. He's the best. That's amazing.
Well, 70 additional guests showed up to this penis eating. So five people got the penis, but the 70 other people there, they also got food. They got to eat beef and crocodile.
I've had crocodile. Crocodile's good.
Yeah,
it's
good.
It's okay. It's like it's salt. It's sea-based chicken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had some when I was in Melbourne at this little restaurant I found in the laneways. And I was like, oh, I got to try something exotic. And I got some crocodile. It tasted fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Delicious.
Well, not alligator.
Yeah.
Do you know the case of Issei Sagawa that is also in Japan?
Who's also walking around free.
Just because over there, we were doing study, we're doing research for a big series coming up about essentially the Japanese criminal justice system and how they persecute people. And what they do is they spend like years deciding if somebody's crazy or not. And then if they decide that you're too that you're not technically responsible for these crimes due to mental illness, they put you in protective custody like they did with Issei Sagawa. So that's why he's allowed to live his life, because he's just like, yes, I'm an unrepentant cannibal and I wish I could do it again. And he's basically, he's a dry cannibal. So he's waiting to do it again, but he's walking around. But they have a whole different view of this in that way, because they kind of decide, like, oh, you're legally cuckoo bananas. Like, you're allowed to be weird.
Are they also operating under the idea of like, well, he scratched his itch. He did.
Yes.
So he probably won't do it again. Is that their thinking?
What if they watch him? They essentially, he's on a kind of like an eternal parole.
Yeah, he could relapse. So it's sort of like an alcoholic is always an alcoholic even after they stop drinking.
He talks about, he ruminates on it because he writes comic book after comic book that he made a lot of money off his own crimes.
Yeah.
But they allow him to, as long as he lives in his little like state approved apartment. Actually sounds kind of nice.
Yeah. I will say these people over there who had the alligator, you know, they're like, ooh, how exotic. We got alligator. And then there's a table being like, we had fucking cock and balls. So maybe you're not as exotic as you think. Because, you know, there's one food critic over there being like, I think I've had better balls before. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to our next story. Yes. This next story, this is labor crime.
Ooh.
Fun. Yeah.
labor.
The owners of a Northern California taquiera chain will pay $140,000 in back wages and damages after federal investigators found they used a fake priest to elicit, quote unquote, confessions of wrongdoing from their employees.
I love this shit. I love the idea because I love teams of goons and I love calling up your old buddy, because how much fun would that be if you got called up from your friend you never worked and he's like, hey, listen, will you fake being a priest and elicit a bunch of confessions from my friends, from my coworkers about work-based crimes? I'd be like,
wow.
Yes.
I think technically this is a stolen valor.
Yeah.
And these priests need to step up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Labor officials began looking into allegations that employees weren't being paid overtime wages at the Sacramento area chain Taquiera Garibaldi in May 2021. As investigators contacted employees, they learned that a man who purported to be a priest had been introduced by the owner to, quote unquote, get the sins out of the restaurant workers. And of course, the priest began the meetings with a prayer, and he asked employees whether they were loyal to the owner and whether they had ever stolen from him.
First of all, they work in a restaurant. Do you have 10 hours? Because the sins are many.
Yeah.
That's all they do is hang out, fuck each other, and cook. I remember going to Catholic school and having to confess. So weird when you just talk to another old man about how you jerked off, and then he's like, go on.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I don't like the whole confession thing. It's nasty.
Well, that's what I understood as a kid. I was implicitly against as a little boy. I grew up, I wanted to be a priest. I was an altar boy. I was involved in all this stuff. I remember at one point being like, why do I have to tell you what I do? And the guy's like, I said, I'm a butler for God. And I'm just like, but I don't understand.
Butler for God.
Like, you're just, you
go draw his bath and leave me alone.
Yeah, why can't I talk directly to the boss?
Yeah, yeah, that's a little weird. Well, so you were like the Karen version of a young Catholic. I'd like to speak to God right now.
I feel like this.
Excuse
man,
me.
Yeah, because also then turned out it was a massive scandal within my church, and I was one of the only kids not molested, and I think it's just because I would have used it for material.
Yeah, there's.
Yep.
The church that we went to back in Virginia, St. Catherine of Siena, we were a very lapsed Catholic family, but we did go briefly to a church called St. Catherine of Siena, and there was a guy who was there that would report. He would go to the priest, and he would like complain about families that weren't coming dressed nice enough for his tastes.
Okay. See, and I like a complaint department.
Well, yeah. Hang on,
that I don't mind.
That guy turned out to be Robert Hansen.
The
big spy. Yeah, he
That's
was.
Awesome.
Now, I don't know if he ever reported my family. I mean, we didn't dress great, but he was this, because he was that super, like, Opus Dei, like, he was deep into it. And his whole thing was, you know, I don't like the way those kids are, like, he would rat out these families that are just like, we're just trying to come to church and, you know,
This shouldn't be, this is not a Michelin star restaurant.
Exactly.
I'm supposed
and
to.
Also, we're not dressing for you, you fucking creep.
Yeah, weird.
So, yeah, just the whole thing. So.
We're dressing
to
impress
the priest. Yeah, that was Robert Hansen, folks.
That's so interesting.
His little hollowed out tree stump. That's where he kept the film.
Yeah, well, you know, you gotta keep it somewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A former employee Maria Parra said in her sworn declaration, quote, as soon as the confession started, I found the conversation to be strange and unlike normal confessions.
Oh, unlike normal ones.
Where I would tell a priest about the sins I wanted to confess.
Right.
The priest mostly had work-related questions, which I thought was strange.
At least, honestly, that's fine for me. Like, I don't want to talk about masturbating or any of that shit. You ask me, like, do you think you put in enough at the store today? Being like, you know what, now that I think about it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I pissed in the fryer later one day.
That'll do it.
Not a good,
I'm
you know.
More of a social scientist. Man, he just died, Robert Hansen.
He just died?
Yeah.
In that Colorado Supermax, I believe.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know. Yeah, they kept him on their lock and key. I didn't know.
Wow. That's insane.
They threw him in a hole.
Oh, just really, really fetching. Winning.
He's flirting. He's
really winning.
Like, his picture's flirting back.
Is he winking at me?
I heard he was very well dressed. A lot better dressed than that Oswald family.
Those ragamuffins.
Oh, ragamuffins.
Yeah, it was Robert Hansen.
Well, of course, this employer has now been made to pay 35 employees a total of $140,000 in back wages. He was one of those pieces of shit that he pulled together tips and used that to pay managers.
Oh, yeah.
You know, just a horrible piece of shit. However, the government has been unable to identify the priest. He's not flipping on the priest.
Oh.
Well, can't the guy just go become a priest? Can't you just go do that?
Yeah.
No,
and then he's bona fide.
It's a process. You have to go live with a bunch of weird men in a dorm room, and then you have to go. It's a thing. Because when I wanted to join the seminary, you start at like 13, 14 years old.
Yeah.
You go in there.
Oh, it's not like the Universal Life Church. It's a whole, you got
to
do your time in boot camp.
Yeah. You're supposed to go and learn. I think that the Catholic priests have like a barrier to entry. Like you're supposed to be especially fucked up.
Well, I know you're definitely supposed to be an alcoholic. They love wine. Catholic priests, they have alcoholism rates through the roof.
Oh, yes.
Yes, indeed.
Well, local church authorities are completely confident he was not a priest of the Diocese of Sacramento. So he was, in fact, just some guy.
Yes, some guy.
I kind of trust him more.
Yeah.
Well, when we were in Rome, we were doing tour in Europe, and I went to, because they have Vatican shops. Where civilians can go. And so I'm going to try to go the next time, and you can get the full regalia.
You can be a bishop.
You just drive. I bet you get free basketball tickets. Like I mentioned, if you just dress up like that, people give you shit, right?
You might also get egged, and then kids might just roll down the window and be like, you want to fuck me? I'm a child. You know? I don't know. I'm not sure if it's the most.
If a man showed up at your show in full Roman Vatican, and he's been like, one ticket, please. You'd be like, yeah, let him in, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, look, he took the time to go to the Spirit Halloween store to let him in.
Yeah, that's true.
He made the trip down to Irvine.
Live from your grave.
Dude, thank you so much for being here. So now we've talked about eunuchs.
Oh, yeah.
We're talking about fake priests.
Yeah.
We should talk a little bit about your comic book.
Yeah.
Minor Threats. It's out already. I had one big question I wanted to ask, because it's just straight up from a writer's perspective, because I saw what you did, and it's one of those where it kind of blows my mind. So the whole thing is about, like, if you want to do a quick log line, you want to hit them with it.
Hey, Patton, hit us with the elevator pitch.
Yeah,
can you sell us in the elevator?
My quick little elevator pitch. Okay, well.
We're going to the 150th floor, so you have about 25 minutes.
First off, sorry about that. I just ate at Chipotle. But,
it's okay. It's part of the pitch.
It's called Minor Threats, and it is about low-level, C-D-level supervillains, the working-class ones. They don't want to take over the world. I want to rob a bank. I want to live good for 9 months. Rob another one. I got crappy powers or no powers. I just have a gimmick and a costume. And in this world where superheroes and supervillains exist, an A-level supervillain kills an A-level superhero's sidekick, the equivalent of the Joker killing Robin.
Yeah.
And now this world's Batman, who's called the Insomniac, and his group called the Continuum of Superman, their Green Lantern, are coming down on the city like a ton of bricks. It's basically becoming a police state immediately, because like it's when a cop gets shot.
Yeah.
They just come down so hard, and the criminal underworld is, we can't operate if this is happening. There's no honor in this world. Let's capture this A-list guy, hand him over to the heroes. We get a little credit in the favor bank. And so they got to survive the night of this superhero police state all of a sudden and battle this A-level villain.
He's extremely dangerous.
Yeah. It's called the Stick Man. And he is he's one of those just crimes for crime's sake. He is not in it for money. It's that esoteric, like, I'm here to change reality. And they're like, yeah, we don't need that shit.
Yeah. My reality's fine. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, we're doing
my
fine.
Reality is I owe this guy 10 grand, so I need to knock over this payroll place.
Well, I love that scene when she's with the main character's with her mom, and she's like, but I need money. She's like, go rob a bank,
go
then.
Go rob a bank. I taught you. Her mom is an old supervillain. The main character is this woman named Playtime, who is, has this sort of ability to turn like any kind of toy or anything into like weapons and stuff. And her mom was this supervillain called the Toy Queen. So she was raised in the life. And now she has to work with all these other desperate. There's a guy called Pigeon Pete.
I met him before. I actually met him in a bar in Wisconsin once.
Yeah, it's a Big Wang's local.
Yeah. I'll tell you, it was really ironic. By the time I was walking out of the bathroom, I was walking like a penguin.
Yeah. Hello. He was one of those guys that was big in the 60s when they would use his pigeons for, sending messages, secret stuff.
It's a good pigeon.
Obsolete. Yeah. So there's just all these different, there's a crime doctor called Scalpel.
Yeah.
You know, Bent Doctor.
Yeah, she's great.
Yeah. So there's all these different, and then we go into their different backstories and personalities. How do they get to this point where they're all this desperate? And it's also our way of going, this is what it must have felt like for the comics characters in the 70s when comics suddenly got very adult and very gritty. When people like Frank Miller and Alan Moore came along, like, do I still exist in this world?
Yeah. So, yeah. What's Kite Man going
to
do?
What is literally what's the Red Bee supposed to do now?
Now that everybody's a fucking militant, hyper police state maniac.
Yeah.
But do, when you make that world, because I was like, all right, so the first thing I was like, holy shit. It feels like a lived in world.
Yes.
When you do that, how do you go about making a world of superheroes? Do you just write a list of names and then decide what's cool and what, like, what their attributes are? Or
you
like,
know, I mean, part of it is we just, I mean, you sit down and you make up list of cool names that you think would be amazing superheroes. And then you have your artist. We have this great artist named Kenneth Scott Hepburn.
He's so good.
Oh my God.
So, yeah, just the right amount of grit.
Yes. And he, like, with our descriptions, me and my writing partner, this guy, Jordan Blum, who's brilliant. And when you write a comic strip, it's a lot like writing a screenplay. Yeah. You kind of write the action out, and your artist is your cinematographer, and they figure out, okay, here's how it will be blocked out. Here's what things. But he's also the costume designer. He designs what these characters will look like, what their costumes will look like, what their equipment will look like. So, yeah, that starts building. Your artist begins to build the world too. And then when you see what they do, you go, oh, then this should happen. If that, you know, and one thing you'll notice in the background, what we really wanted to do was show a world that has suffered 60 years of comic book continuity. Mm. What would that look like?
Yeah.
Like, so there in the background, there are the rubble and the wreckage from huge crossover events, huge world type events that hasn't been totally cleaned up.
I love the idea of them building housing projects on the skeleton of a kaiju.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's fun as hell. Because in my head, immediately, I was like, and that's a fucking Adult Swim show. You know, like, that's literally its own show inside of each one. That's what we're working on a comic book for Dark Horse, too, where it's the same thing where you're like, I want certain things in the background appear, like, drop in a whole other thing. It could be its own story.
And you never even reference it. It's there. You can see it. Mm-hmm. So it's like, that housing community, we like make it look like a Jaeger has just defeated a kaiju. They're both in pieces on the ground. And then what have people built around it? Think of like the High Line in New York.
Yeah.
Something abandoned that people then built up. Or like when you see those cool communities of old like storage containers that they've made these cool little apartments.
I got a beef.
Uh-oh.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I got a beef with a plot line that I heard about the other day.
Uh-oh. What?
Batman. There are some people that say Alfred was Joker. Do you see that?
Wait, what?
No. There's some the same article that he got about Jeeps being having ducks.
Google this.
It's a bescared news.com.
Alfred is Joker.
Like, getyourunclemad.org.
Wait a minute.
Alfred?
Wait,
Alfred,
are they saying Alfred Joker was Joker the whole time?
Yes, and they say that Alfred did this.
No, it's called Elseworlds. It's a whole thing where it's an alternate universe thing, and
that's my beef.
They do that all the time.
There was an alternate DC story where Alfred became the Joker to prove his love for Batman.
Yes, because he said Batman was depressed, so he needed to give him a reason to live. I saw this and it pisses me the fuck off because Alfred was a frail old man. Yeah. He would never do this with Batman, but that is true. And that's DC approved.
Alfred is Special Forces.
Yeah. He's British SAS.
But he was old by the time he could have been Joker. Isn't that ridiculous, Marcus? Now, do you have a beef as well?
I mean, I don't. I mean, it's alternate universe stories are fine. I got no problem with exploring other ideas, other ways. Did you ever read Red Sun?
That one by Mark Millar is fucking amazing. Red Sun is fucking amazing.
It's one of the best. Mm. It's an alternate universe where Superman lands on Earth 12 hours later. So he doesn't land in Kansas. He lands in Siberia.
And he
becomes the great communist leader. He becomes basically, he replaces Stalin.
I hate to break it to you. Superman's capitalist. Without a doubt. The amount of merch that man sells. He works for the newspapers. Yeah.
How is it? Because this is your, first comic book?
No, I mean, I'd done other comics, but it was always working with other people's IPs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've done a Justice League comic. I've done a Batman comic. We did a 4-issue MODOK comic for Marvel. I did one for Dark Horse. I don't know if you guys read Black Hammer,
I love Black Hammer.
I did a little side story within that world, but that's other people. So this is from the ground up.
Now, do you, that's it's awesome. Kind of crazy to get somebody else's IP. Like, did you have to get like a binder of the rules of the characters?
That,
like,
no, shit? I mean, you can't go that crazy, obviously, but they
you can't
trust
have Alfred
that...
be Joker. That's ridiculous.
You know, you work within what you know of the thing. And if you go too crazy, like, oh, or you'll do something and they'll say, for instance, in my Justice League comic, Aquaman is not in it because at the time it was coming out, they're like, well, Aquaman is about to go missing for a while. So that has to be part of your story. Work that into it. Mm-hmm. So there was all that, you know, going on.
Where did he go?
They were doing some reboot on him. This was in the late 90s.
Aquaman really dropped the ball on that whole Ocean Gate thing. That would have been a chance for him to be a superhero, and he blew it.
Jason Momoa was unavailable.
Aww. Yeah, he was not there. Yeah, so there was a whole... And I know comic book writers who... Because they get comic book companies, the big two, maybe Dark Horse as well, but they get together the way like the WWE gets together, and they plot out the next year's worth of stories. Like, this will be our big crossover, and here's how your title will feed into it. And I remember... James Robinson, who was doing this amazing comic back in the day called Starman. And suddenly there was a plot where Starman built a spaceship and went out into space for like 12 issues to rescue the first Starman. And I was like, that was a weird right turn. And then a friend of mine told me, no, they had this summer crossover event that he hated so much that he wrote a story where his character leaves the fucking planet so he doesn't have to be part of it.
That's
Well, it's like, again, I mean, how Alan Moore did something kind of similar with Crisis on Infinite Earths during his Swamp Thing run, where he sort of took over the whole thing and was like, no, it's not about the Anti-Monitor. It's about all these weird guys in South America that are trying to bring back like a primordial beast.
Yep. Okay.
He hijacked.
Yeah,
one of the largest crossover events in history. It's amazing.
And made a way cooler crossover event.
Yeah.
That was amazing when Swamp Thing has to travel into the Netherworld and John Constantine and the Demon and Dead Man and the Phantom Stranger. It's amazing.
It's incredible. Yeah, it's one of the best.
What would be something that DC or Marvel would disapprove of, but you're like, please, God, I want to do this with one of their superheroes or supervillains?
I've always wanted to do a thing. It doesn't necessarily need to be Peter Parker doing it, but within the Marvel universe, because it seems like Marvel way more than DC really is anticipated the whole the warring techs right now, and we're watching it. Basically, it's Musk Tech versus Zuck Tech. Basically, that's what's going.
Musk Tech. God, it is the dumb future.
It is. It's the dumb future. But in Marvel, there's Stark Tech. There's Osborn Tech. There's Oztech. And so I was like, either have a Peter Parker or a new guy come along, and he's like, these fucking assholes, they're all they do is build weapons and shit, and they hoard it to themselves. So he starts just releasing open source blueprints of not only his advanced tech, but of theirs, so that everyone can have
a whistleblower.
Well, not even, almost like a Banksy, because these guys, so then he forces like someone like Stark and Osborn and Octavius and even Doom, you know, they all have to go like, we've got to crush this fucking guy.
I like this idea.
And suddenly they have to really question what it is that they do. That would be amazing. It'll be really cool because Peter Parker is the one who has a moral core to a fault.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And by the way, there are problems with doing that. There is not the best idea to just have open source code for a repulsor ray out there for anyone to have.
Oh, yeah, because then anybody can have it, including the most low-level villains.
Worst people, yeah. Yes. So, but then see where that goes. That would be an amazing story.
I would like to see a comic book where Spider-Man apologizes for killing Macho Man. Did you know that?
That was a Macho Man story.
Did you hear that? So when he was filming Spider-Man, Macho Man was the wrestler.
With his beard shaved.
Bonesaw,
they put him against a dude who didn't know how to wrestle. Macho takes a bump. That's basically the beginning of the end for Macho Man. He got addicted to pills and then he had a heart attack. So Spider-Man is responsible for killing one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Well, I single-handedly blame Tobey Maguire.
Yeah.
Okay. If I see him, first, you killed Macho Man.
He didn't help. That's for damn sure.
Do you feel that there's a pressure that you're considered like in the Mount Rushmore of like nerd culture, and then you go into you have to do this, you have to write a comic book? Do you feel like there's a lot of people who are looking at you being like, better be fucking good?
Yeah, you know,
not nerds. They're so sympathetic.
Yeah, I know. They're great.
Nerds are folksy. They are non-judgmental. They are supportive, and they love hard right turns with their beloved characters.
They love
risk. I've never felt myself as one of the kings of nerd culture. I'm maybe one of the archdukes or low-level earls.
I put you within the arcana, the royal arcana.
Yeah. And I, you know, because I'm still a fan, I'm not messing with anyone's IP. It's my own IP. I can do whatever the fuck I want with it. And I can tell the stories that I like. And as you get older, you start to realize, well, there's 7 billion people on the planet. They can't all be my fan. If I get a tenth of those, I'm fine.
Oh, yeah.
That's more than enough to make a good living. So, you know, the people that try to, sometimes I feel like people that try to go global, that's when the product starts to break down.
Oh, it has to
and
be
loses
so
because it has to. Yeah, it has to appeal generic to everybody. Yeah. It's like it becomes the food at Disneyland. Perfectly fine. But nobody goes like, I can't wait to Disneyland to get that great lunch menu. It's like that's just fuel. That's not there to be tasted.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? We've talked about it. The internet shows the all you need is really it's 100,000 fans.
Yeah.
If you have 100,000 fans, you can have a full-on living doing whatever the hell it is that you want because, again, we don't need them. We don't need the big portals. We have the, you can take it directly to the people. And if they want it, then they will go and get it.
It also was really telling when The Force Awakens came out and the Nerd Mafia, and they weren't wrong in saying this. This is just a reboot of Star Wars. They just redid Star Wars. So then Rian Johnson puts out The Last Jedi and really introduces some new concepts. Like
rolls
the fucking dice. Some of it didn't work. Some of it did. But he did something new. And the nerds went, no! They screamed. So then for the third one, that one was clearly done by a committee. Like, okay, let's look at all the hate threads. Let's try it. And then it completely. But in a weird way, it was. I think that was necessary because now I think it freed a lot of people going, oh, part of these people's pleasure is being outraged anyway. So there's
nothing
point
you can do.
Exactly. Yeah. So just do what you want to do and do it the best you can.
Little Mermaid fucks Aquaman. Can we make it happen?
That's it.
Little Mermaid fucks Aquaman. That's the elevator pitch. Also, where is his listening dick? Where is Aquaman's dick?
It's inside.
Aquaman.
Aquaman has legs. He has legs.
Oh, he does have legs?
Aquaman is merely a man who can breathe underwater. And you said that you wrote that story in 1999?
Yeah.
I believe that would have been when Aquaman left and came back with the hook on his hand.
Yeah, he got the hook.
Yeah, he got the hook. Okay.
Yeah. Man, literally got the hook.
Glad we cleared that up.
Thank God, Marcus. Thank fucking Christ. Man, this has been great.
It's been so much fun, man.
Thank you so much, Pat. This has been awesome.
Look, I'm happy to come back. And if you need another palate cleanser after whatever God awful rabbit hole you guys are about to go down, you know, the weird hit, I will happily come back in and talk about severed penises and fake priests.
Isn't it palate cleansing?
It is literally an amuse-bouche.
It really is. And I'll save the story for next time, the story about the man who stole the forklift in the Lowe's parking lot, drove it to the Home Depot parking lot, and killed a woman in the Home Depot parking lot.
Yeah, he was mad.
Yeah, he was real mad.
Save it.
But think about how fun it would be to drive a forklift around unabided, like no one telling you what to do. You can just drive it. Oh, yeah, man, the chaos.
Kind of fun. Minor Threats, check out the comic book by Dark Horse. Is there a place that you want people to buy it from?
Well, I hope wherever you're listening to this, if there is a local comic book store or LCS, I hope that you go and patronize them and actually walk through the door and purchase a copy. Help them out.
Always.
If not...
What was the name of the website we used for Soul Plumber that was only, it chained together independent comic book stores?
Bookshop.org?
I believe that's it.
Yeah. Bookshop.org is a great place to go shopping for books. That's where I get all my books.
Awesome.
Great.
Awesome. Highly recommended.
Also, I'm going to recommend a movie from 2009 starring you, Mr. Oswald. Big fan.
Oh,
yes. I love it. It's got radio, it's got football, it's got murderous ideas. Big fan was fucking awesome.
Thank you. All your work is awesome,
and you're such a legend, and you were one of the reasons all of us got into comedy.
It's true. Shaving your back with a rusty tunic clan lid is still one of my favorite jokes of all time.
Wow.
I'll fan out here on mic because I can. I would never do it to your face.
Yeah. Thank you.
No, yeah. The Comedians of Comedy documentary is the inspiration for everything. That's the reason why we're sitting here today is because that documentary inspired me so much.
So that check's in the mail. Don't worry.
Then I'll be taking an extra bagel on the way.
Yes, indeed. You got off easier than David Cross because the first time I saw him the first week I moved to New York in 06 and I tracked him down for two blocks, and I gave him a huge hug.
He's so scary.
I don't know if
you
liked
saw
it.
Him.
I was like, I'm a big fan. Yeah. You're the reason I got into comedy. He was very sweet.
I can't believe.
I'm sure he wasn't thrilled.
Can't believe I'm meeting you in the first week of August. Give me a hug.
I remember Doug Stanhope talking about how he was walking to his venue one time, and he saw these crazy fucking looking guys walking down the street, so he changed the side of the street, and then he was watching him go right into his show. And he's just like, oh, it's my fans.
Well, we are amazingly blessed to have such great fans, and thank you so much for being here, Patton. And all right, everyone, that's been this month's palate cleanser.
Yeah, this is it.
Thank you all so much for listening. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Hail Gein.
Magustalations, everybody.
Mr. Oswald, thank you for your participation.
Watch your cocks.
This show is made possible by listeners like you. Thanks to our ad sponsors, you can support our shows by supporting them. For more shows like the one you just listened to, go to lastpodcastnetwork.com.